Dig deep into business development companies at the Active Investment Company Alliance 2025 BDC Forum. It's Wednesday, June 11th in New York City. A full day of big names and BDCs at the podium or on informative panels and networking opportunities with fund sponsors, asset managers, institutional investors, and others who are actively involved in business development companies. Advisors can get 7 CE credits for attending. Go to AICAlliance.org/events for the full schedule and details. Use the code Navigator20 for a 20% discount on your registration fee.
You've got questions, we've got answers. From John Cole Scott at Closed End Fund Advisors. Welcome to a Closed End Fund Q&A on The Navigator. This is The Navigator, where we talk about all-weather active investing and plotting a course to financial success using closed-end funds. The Navigator is brought to you by the Active Investment Company Alliance, a unique industry organization representing all facets of the closed-end fund industry, from sponsors and creators down to users and investors. If you're looking for excellence beyond indexing, The Navigator will point you in the right direction. Returning to the show today, John Cole Scott, president of Closed End Fund Advisors in Richmond, Virginia, online at cefadvisors.com. Their data, which is really important to almost everything John talks about because it backstops all of his work, is available for you free, and you can dig into it for yourself at cefdata.com. And beyond his firm, John is the chairman of the Active Investment Company Alliance, so you can go there to learn all about closed-end funds, interval funds, and business development companies at AICAlliance.org. We're digging into some questions that have come in for the Navigator, and before we start, I'll remind you, you can submit questions to us at thenavigator@AICAlliance.org. John Cole Scott, welcome back. Great to chat with you again.
Happy to be here, Chuck.
So today we are doing some nuts and bolts questions about closed-end funds. Or at least they feel a little nuts and bolts to us. They may be, some may be a little simple for our audience, but not necessarily all. So let's start with one that kind of digs into research in its own way, which is, how do I find the best closed-end fund in each sector?
Well, you know, that's the easy question, right, Chuck? And what's going to happen next in capital markets? Interest rates, you know, recessions, global politics. And so what I'll say is the layers of analysis that we do at the firm for our clients. And remember, we're long only. We don't hedge. We're pro closing funds. We obviously like them. We eat them for breakfast. But we look at a couple of things. We look at discounts as a factor. We look at quality of management and NAV. We look at what's in the portfolio. So if there's 10 funds in a sector, is one more global, one more U.S.? Is one more debt, one more equity? There's a lot of balance and hybrid structures in our universe. We also look at the expense ratio. It's never the most important, but you should analyze it because it's part of the math of what NAV will do. And we really look at things like volatility. So we look at the two-year weekly beta of the NAV versus S&P 500 and also its benchmark. And that gives us a sense of, is this fund's manager, this is not discount analysis, this is manager analysis, a more volatile manager or a less? And there are times, and there are clients, where we lean into the more volatile, and there are times where we lean into the less volatile. We also do a silly thing with dividends. We look at the one-year classification for a portfolio in each fund and look at its breakup historically, one-year, two-year, three-year. How common is return of capital, qualified dividends, long-term gains, which are all the tax advantages, and how common is ordinary income and short-term gains? And we try to understand in your marginal tax bracket, what's your after-tax yield? What's your tax friction? Our benchmark is your qualified rate should generally be the rate the portfolio level should give you. So the answer is not simple. Name brand fund, widest discount, highest yield, as you might imagine, there's a layers. Now, if I roll it back a little bit, and an individual investor that may be retired, so has time, but doesn't have our 335 data points daily at their analysis, you need to look, you know, at the fund's fact card, the fund sponsor, to know what you're in. And then the discount, sadly, is the most important thing, because tight discounts tend to widen, wide discounts tend to narrow. But like we talk about regularly, diversify your portfolio, not one sponsor, not one sector, rarely be over 5% in one holding, and you should be okay. But there's levels of what you can look into to pick that fund for you. And then imagine, you can always tax loss swap the right time of year. You can rotate based on what happens next with interest rates and GDP and other factors as well.
John, this one is a common one because everybody's looking at closed-end funds because they like the yield, which is, do you think my closed-end fund's going to reduce my distribution? How can I tell that one's coming? Like, what are the trouble signs?
So a couple of things. First, analyze the sector the fund is anchoring in, you know, whether it's a muni bond fund or a CLO fund, very different return and yield profiles. We use a data point that we like to call leverage adjusted NAV yield to consider what the manager has to do to meet the dividend policy of the board and how reasonable that feels, you know, in the real world environment. We also look at like 1 year, 3 year destructive return of capital. Never a perfect data point, but is the NAV performance feeling the NAV yield and is a return of capital helps us figure out whether the return of capital could be considered destructive to principal. When we regularly find people think all return of capital is bad, or some people think all return of capital is good, it's definitely not that answer. And so the other flavor is activism and discounts. If the fund is trading wide, there's less risk to a cut because they don't want to trade wider. Activists can come in and they usually will raise distributions as a way of getting more cash out closer to NAV, which what a over distribution is. And then secondly, just remember, in a terrible market event, you can put a lot of stuff in the news cycle and not get penalized for it. So if things get crazy, that could be the cut. So if it's normal, less likely. But remember, if it's reasonable, you can be overpaid and it's still fine the wider the discount is versus history and the peer group.
Let's do a related question. Could my term closed-end fund change its term date?
Great question. And the term structure is also known, well, not only, but the recent ones are the CF 2.0 structure have been around for a while. They basically came out and said, generally after 12 years, you can get net asset value. If enough people vote to stay, the fund will become what's left a permanent vehicle. Here the question comes, is it an asset manager where are they willing to do a semi-terrible thing just to keep a fund a little longer? Like this came up when one of our data clients asked about the relatively soon term trust for Blackstone senior loan funds, where when there are premiums, they actually extended the term because the whole market was doing well and shareholders voted to extend the term. That's great. Currently, it wasn't at a premium. In my opinion, they're going to probably unwind those funds. Blackstone is doing many other things. Their manager, their reputation is important. The risk would be one-off orphan future IPOs unlikely. Still probably not going to happen. But if you think of the tail risk, the manager doesn't care. If he's not likely to ever bring another closed-end fund to market, to the IPO market, they're not going to worry about hurting people's experience. Because at the end of the day, these fund sponsors, when the market comes back, which it always has, the wholesalers will be going to advisors and they're going to have to explain the good, the bad, and the ugly. So it's always a possibility, but generally shouldn't be considered a major risk in the market in our experience.
And lastly, we'll dig into a real nuts and bolts question about expenses, which is, are closed-end fund expense ratios included in a yield? So if a closed-end fund has an expense ratio of 2% and a yield of 10%, is the yield really 10% or is it 8%? And then with fees and other expenses, if a fund states that it has a 2% expense ratio, but it uses leverage, are the leverage fees included in the expense ratio or are they on top of it?
So the general expense ratio you'll see on a fat card at a Morningstar are going to be operational expenses, management fee, and cost of leverage. It's an all-in cost. When you look at the distribution rate of a closed-end fund, it is not taking into account management fees or operating expenses, except for the fact, because basically almost, I can't think of a fund that isn't true, but every fund we know of, they accrue their expenses daily in NAV, right? So it's like you never see the movement. It's just at the end of a year, you've paid the, let's say it's all in 2% with leverage, you know, non-gross, not leveraged or whatever. So it's not yield-centric. It's just the manager is getting its fees out of the NAV. Now, if the NAV does terribly, there's less investments to produce yield, but the yield is the either manufactured distribution set by the board based on long-term performance, or it's in many cases fueled mostly from real earned income or distributions for, you know, bond, many of the bond funds.
And of course, funds have a responsibility to basically pay out, what is it, 98, 99% of the income that they bring in because they're a pass-through vehicle.
They are. If they don't pay out enough of it, they have to pay excise tax, which it has happened once or twice in BDCs that didn't like how they were trading. I've never noticed it happen in a closed-end fund, and it would be considered silly because you would trade terribly, and then you'd be hearing from Karpus and Bulldog, Saba, and Sit, in my experience.
Yeah. So the answer is consider the fees and expenses in a closed-end fund the same way you would with your traditional mutual funds, which is they're not getting in the way when you see a fund doing something and performance is stated there. The fees are factored in and the performance is what the performance is.
It is.
John, great stuff as always. We've got more questions and we're again hoping we'll get some more still. The Navigator at AICAlliance.org is the place to send them. But until those next questions or we have another conversation, thanks as always for joining me on The Navigator.
Always enjoy chatting, Chuck.
The Navigator is a joint production of the Active Investment Company Alliance and Money Life with Chuck Jaffe. And I am Chuck Jaffe, and you can learn more about me and my show at moneylifeshow.com. You can find my show on your favorite podcast app. But to learn more about closed-end funds, interval funds, and business development companies generally, go to AICAlliance.org. That's the website for the Active Investment Company Alliance. Thanks to my guest, John Cole Scott. He's president of Closed End Fund Advisors. He's the chairman of the Active Investment Company Alliance. His firm is online at cefadvisors.com, and you can dig into their data at cefdata.com. And John's on X at John Cole Scott. The Navigator podcast is available every Friday. Make sure you don't miss an episode by following or subscribing on your favorite podcast app. We'll be back next week with more Closed End Fund talk. And until then, happy investing, everybody.